Welcome to this special live Think Tank edition of Colorectal Cancer Update. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. For the second year in a row, we gathered seven clinical investigators, Drs. Rich Goldberg, Dan Haller, Howard Hoxter, Axel Grothy, Neil Maripol, Mike O'Connell, and Alan Vanook at the Gastrointestinal Cancer Symposium, a.k.a. ASCO GI, to discuss and debate some of the most controversial questions in this disease. Like our first adventure, we placed about 200 portable computers in the audience and allowed attendees to fire out questions they had for the faculty. And by the end of this Saturday night, we had almost 500 queries, many of which were discussed in the conference. The meeting focused on a series of recent clinical trial reports, and the first was a presentation at the 2007 ASCO meeting by Dr. Aymeric de Grammont of the Optimox II study, that demonstrated a survival disadvantage to total treatment holidays in the management of metastatic disease. When the think tank audience was polled for their usual approach to the patient treated in the first-line setting with FOLFOX bevacizumab who developed neurotoxicity with oxaliplatin, by far the most common recommendation was to continue the 5-FU1 bevacizumab rather than a total cessation of systemic therapy. Dr. Grothy began the discussion.
First of all, Optimox study was closed prematurely because bevacizumab came to the market and the investigators didn't think it was justified to have a non-bevacizumab study. So we don't know anything about the Optimox-like designs, Optimox-like treatment in the context of bevacizumab. So it's not the investigator's fault. It's not the study's fault. It's just by having chance. I do think there are two points that are problematic with Optimox too. First of all, the small number of patients, of course. It's a phase two level of evidence. The second point is that tumors were allowed to regrow up to almost the same initial size. Having said that, I mean, we cannot ignore the difference of 7 months in overall survival. This is concerning to me. It just raises a flag. Doesn't mean, you know, this is only based on the fact that there was chemotherapy-free interval. The monitoring issue, you know, how soon do you reintroduce chemotherapy is definitely one of the components. But if we want to formulate a default, a treatment recommendation, I think the default right now should rather be to treat than not to treat, to treat to progression than give patients a pre-planned long free interval. That doesn't mean that I don't work around holidays, patient holiday events, personal events, that I can't just give patients a break of weeks, but I'm not thinking of months. That's the right thing.
Neil, how do people respond to the idea in your practice of complete holidays? Does it make them a little bit nervous?
I mean, I think the patients really take their cues from us about the safety and validity of taking a complete holiday. If we present it as a reasonable option, and in view of the Optimox II data, I tend to couch it in terms of we do have some data now to suggest that for some patients this may not be a good thing. On the other hand, I recommend it to some patients or offer it as an option in the settings that Rich alluded to, where it appears that the patient is not at risk of developing very symptomatic bad news in a short period of time with a little bit of tumor growth. So I think when I've presented it as a fair option, patients respond to that and are not particularly anxious about the security blanket of the therapy.
Dan, in our prostate cancer think tank, there's a lot of discussion about intermittent androgen deprivation. They say a lot of the men get uncomfortable with it. They want to be a treatment. What's your experience with that?
Well, I agree. I think patients follow our lead. And I admit to not complete ignorance, but some ignorance at knowing what the absolute best course is. I think we don't have a good handle on the markers or the predictors of whom you can stop everything, who need maintenance, and who should just continue. I suspect the people that need maintenance are the people who present with visceral disease, other measures of high volume disease, symptomatic disease, where in my own experience, those patients don't get much of a holiday. They get a weekend. A comment, one of the questions had to do with the Optimox II study being stopped prematurely. And I have to say, last night I had dinner with Aymeric de Grammont, and we talked about this, and I don't think I've ever seen him quite so upset, because they're going away to write Optimox II next week. They're going on a retreat. And the data are just so hard to interpret, and they've done so many analyses of it, and Optimox I, that he's, I think, a little vacillating on how he feels about it. I think he has an intuition about what the data should show, as we all do, but it's difficult then to take the data and prove those points.
So, Rich, can you tell us about a couple of your patients that sort of fit both those models?
Sure. So I'm thinking of a patient I just saw on Thursday in clinic who's had metastatic disease that's mainly been nodal. So nodal disease in the abdomen, nodal disease in the thorax, some nodes that you can feel in the neck.
How old is the patient?
The patient's in his early 70s, a functional, well-to-do guy with a house in the mountains kind of thing.
Presented with Mets?
Presented with Mets. And he has been most recently on cetuximab and has had an exuberant response with an exuberant rash. And so it's been a struggle. You know, his fingers are cracking, his face is beet red, he's got pustules all up and down his body. And we have put him on treatment for periods of 3 and 4 months. His dermatologic problems have gotten worse and worse. And then we've stopped him for periods of 3 or 4 months. His disease is easily visible on scan and palpable in his neck. It's never been symptomatic other than worrying him. And I think this is an ideal circumstance. He doesn't have any disease that's going to make an organ go into failure anytime soon. And that, in contrast to a 36-year-old woman I saw this week in clinic with 80% of her liver replaced, who I was just getting started on chemotherapy, and her future in my hands is going to be continuous chemotherapy.
So the man on the cetuximab, how does his quality of life change when you stop the therapy?
You know, he starts to look like you and me again.
How long does it take? It
takes him about 6 weeks. He's been off treatment now for about 2 weeks. Already some of the pustules are going away and the rash is starting to fade. My guess is that he'll probably be off treatment again for another 3 or 4 months and that he'll get back to a normal quality of life.
You can lower the dose, you know.
I can lower the dose. I haven't done that.
You want to comment on that, Howard?
No, but I mean, there are treatment guidelines for cutaneous toxicity, including using the weekly dosing reduced from 250 per meter squared per week to 200 or 150. And I've had patients where I've done that because, you know.
Well, I choose to reduce the dose in blocks rather than in weeks.
Alan, what about in the first line setting, the patient who gets started on biologic 5-FU with either oxali or irinotecan, or particularly oxali responding, develops some neurotoxicity question, can you stop or should you stop everything and you keep 5-FU and Bev going? What's your approach?
Again, I think it does depend on the patient and the burden of disease and how much toxicity they've had, and also on the discussion with the patient. I do think patients are very uncomfortable often stopping therapy. Certainly the Optimox 2, while by no means definitive, changed my mind in terms of my comfort zone of giving absolute holidays. So especially, I think the point is well taken that the patient who had high volume disease with a quick, robust response probably isn't the right patient to give a holiday to. They may have kinetically unfavorable disease, but we all have these patients who percolate along where I think that's much more tenable.
Mike, the NSABP, and you're taking a lead role looking at genomic analyses of colon tumors, particularly in the adjuvant setting. Do you think we're going to get to a point in the metastatic setting with a patient like Rich's who presents with metastatic disease that we'll be able to pick out the patients that we can take sort of different paths on?
I think it's possible. I think certainly in the adjuvant situation, the results of gene expression profiling are very promising, although as one of the audience asked in the question, it's not really ready for prime time yet. It needs to be validated. But I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be possible conceptually to identify a genetic profile that would be associated with aggressiveness of metastatic disease. I point out something else, too, that going back and looking at the old databases, the ACCENT database, as we reported at ASCO last year, showed some very interesting information. Patients with primary stage 2 colon cancer had a more indolent natural history once they recurred. They lived longer than those that had primary stage 3. And those that had a very long disease-free interval before recurrence also had more indolent disease thereafter. And so I'd submit that we may already